It's still morning, right?
Yes.
Yes, in California
it's still morning. My name is Sue Seibold-Simpson, and I'm with Binghamton University at the State University of New York. And I'm really happy to be here in San Francisco and not in New York. Though I have, you know, we've been touched. Who else is from the East Coast? I mean, like, we're just all living on our cell phones saying, so what's going on? Is the rain started yet? Are you safe? Do you have water? It's been very exciting. I also have to acknowledge that I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation. I would like to acknowledge my co-investigators, Dr. Pam Mission. She works in public affairs at Binghamton University, and Dr. Leo Wilton. He works in human development. So this is a multidisciplinary project, and I receive funding from the Binghamton University Provost Office to conduct this study. But of course, my primary thanks today go to my community partners. In our community, we have a coalition which is established through our Department of Mental Health at the county level. It's called Keeping Youth Drug-Free and Safe. And the coalition is comprised of government members, the health department, mental health, county officials as a whole. We have 8 school districts that participate in this project. Healthcare providers. We have 2 main healthcare institutions in our community, and both providers are at the table. Law enforcement, media, and a variety of community-based organizations. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I do not look at my adolescent years with fondness. How many of you would like to go back and be 13 again?
No.
But we do acknowledge that there's a variety of stresses that go on in our adolescent life. There are some who fly through with great success. But there are many who are challenged as they go through these difficult years. And we know that mental health issues and substance abuse remain consistent concerns for our adolescent populations. That hasn't changed from when I was a teenager. And we know that we can't use a single strategy. We need to use an ecological model and address their concerns at a variety of levels. So we need to be doing things individually with our youth. We need to be working with them in peer groups, with their families, with their schools, and at the community level at large. So the purpose of this study was to determine the extent to which involvement in organized activities is associated with and predicts adolescent substance abuse behaviors controlling for a variety of protective and risk factors. And when we talk about outside activities, what we're talking about is what they're doing when the school day is over. So it could be during weekends, it could be after school. But we're really talking about that time when, unfortunately, some adolescents have a lot of disposable free time and can engage in a variety of risk behaviors which can contribute to poor outcome. The study was guided by the positive youth development paradigm. And, of course, there's a variety of different models within that paradigm. And America's Promise is one of them. And I'm woefully embarrassed that I didn't include them in this slide. But the most classic ones are the developmental asset model, Catalano and Hawkins risk and protective or social development model, and Karen Pittman and her 5 C's. So why outside activities? There's a robust body of literature that looks at outside activities, but some gaps have been observed within that literature, particularly, is there an indication that length of time in engaging in outside activities contributes? We also were interested in whether or not the expansive amount of activities across, you know, are there too many activities? Are there not enough activities? But we also know that these are modifiable behaviors within our community. So as public health nurses, as community leaders, we felt it was really critical to say, is there something going on that we can have a positive impact on? So we did a secondary data set analysis using descriptive predictive correlational analyses. We, with our arrangement with the Kids Coalition, they've been collecting data since 2004 every 2 years. So we had surveys from 2004, 2006, 2008. Our analyses are on the 2010 data. And what happens is the kids receive a survey once a year, and it goes over the process of a month. It's a paper and pencil survey, and there is a national organization that does all the analyses. In New York State, there were 2 separate funding streams that started in the early 2000s. Any New Yorkers here? Okay, so in New York State, there were two major funding streams. One was for teen pregnancy prevention, and the state chose to go with the asset model. So across New York State, there were teen pregnancy prevention projects based specifically on identifying and building assets. They then took the communities that care social development model and applied that towards mental health substance use and abuse. So we used Catalano and Hawkins risk and protective factors to address mental health and substance abuse issues in our community. So some communities had both funding streams. Other communities only had one or the other. But unfortunately, our questionnaire asked no questions about sex, which is really sad. And a lot of the sex models really weren't looking at substance use. So in our eight school districts, we had 5,873 participants who completed the survey. Mean age was approximately 15 years old. And consistent with the demographics in our community, 87% of the youth were Caucasian. The prevention needs assessment survey, as I indicated earlier, is based on Catalano and Hawkins Communities That Care survey. It has a variety of scales that include risk and protective factors at the individual, peer, family, school, and neighborhood levels. It also asks questions related to substance abuse, antisocial behavior, and gambling. And then we added a specific set of questions related to outside activities, looking at breadth, depth, and parental support. If anyone's not familiar with the Prevention Needs Assessment Survey or Catalano and Hawkins surveys, let me know, and I do have my laptop here, and I can show you an example of the items that were asked. So these were the outside activities that we collected information on. These came from the literature, and we looked at scouts, after-school activities, sports, tutoring, mentoring, music lessons, and we asked each, let me show, this is the form that we gave to the kids. So they got the survey, and it came in an envelope. It was all anonymous, and then we tucked. One day, we spent the afternoon tucking this piece of paper into thousands and thousands of surveys so that each youth had an opportunity to answer these questions. At the end of the survey, the PNAs went to Bach Harrison, and the outside activities form went to us, and then we were able to scan them in. So you'll see, we do delineate what we're talking about for each of the topic areas. So after-school programs were intended to be outside of the school setting, so YMCA, Boys and Girls Club, youth and other church-related activities, so youth groups were anticipated to be affiliated with churches, and then other school-sponsored activities. This was drama club, being on the school newspaper, mathletes, anything that they were doing within the school setting. We had counseling services, and then we had other. And then our parent items, my parents support me being involved in after-school activities as compared to my parents make me or force me to participate in after-school activities. I'm not presenting today on the parent items, but if you're interested, we can talk about it at another time. So in regards to the behaviors that our teens are participating in, about 53% acknowledged that they had used alcohol ever. The 73.8 is a mistake. Please excuse me. It's really intended to be the opposite of that. So roughly 26% of the youth had used alcohol within the past 30 days. 14% indicated that they had binge drank or had more than four alcoholic drinks at one setting within the past 3 months. 23% acknowledged using cigarettes, and only 10% are using cigarettes within the past 30 days, which I think is awesome. In terms of marijuana use, about 22% had indicated they had ever tried marijuana, with about 13% using marijuana. And we do know at the national level that marijuana is on the rise. Marijuana use is continuing to either rise or stay relatively the same. Alcohol use has been decreasing. Cigarette use has been decreasing. So our data are very similar with national trends. And then any drug use, because we asked, they have a whole page of drugs that they can acknowledge have they used or not used. So that included street drugs, speed and coke and things along those lines, as well as prescription drugs, as well as steroid use. So any drug use ever was approximately 28%. They do also have social desirability items in this particular scale. So they asked them a made-up drug, have you ever used this? And that's one way of eliminating kids who may be, just kind of yanking your chain because they think, oh, wow, a survey. So here's the participation in outside activities, the breadth item. So this is across all these opportunities, how many are kids acknowledging that they participate in. So a couple of things you'll see here in seventh grade, that's where it seems to peak at 1.91, though it is relatively consistent between 1 and 2. Though some kids would say they did up to 10 activities and other kids would indicate they did no activities. So it peaks at 7th grade and then again rises when they get into 12th grade. This is the depth. This is how many years kids have participated in outside activities by activity. So you'll see organized sports in our community is by far the most common activity that they're participating in for about 6 years. That's followed by music lessons at 3 years. Other school activities at 2.48 and youth group at 2.8. I love these charts. Not surprisingly, kids don't just join and then stay there. They join and then they leave. So this is participation in sports. So between 35 and 60% of kids are participating at any given time, and it increases when they get into junior high and then kind of falls off a little bit over the course of their high school career. Music lessons. How many of you have kids that said, oh, please, please, I want to do the clarinet? So it goes up when they have that opportunity. In our school system, that's usually the end of primary school or the entry into fourth or fifth grade. And then it relatively precipitously decreases. My daughter quit in high school because she said she would not do the football game. She didn't want to be part of the marching band. That's when she stopped. Youth groups. So again, between 25 and 30%, a relatively straight line. Not major changes with youth groups. And again, these are the ones that are affiliated with their church. Other school activity shows a pretty strong linear increase, starting at about fifth grade and then going up. In our communities, in New York State in particular, youth are encouraged to participate in service learning and to work to provide some level of service learning within their communities as part of their requirement for graduation. So this is not surprising. But it is lovely. I mean, almost half the kids indicated by 12th grade that they were participating in some level of other school activities. And then Scouts. I do have some friends who are Eagle Scouts, and I commend them because really Scouting starts strong and then just really falls off. So when you look at relationships between alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs and participation in outside activities, first what I did is I looked at relationships between just engaging in the substance use and delinquency behaviors. And you'll see that, not surprisingly, you know, consistent with Jesser's problem theory, the correlations range between 0.4 and 0.6, so moderate to strong relationships among using alcohol, cigarettes, and marijuana. And I stuck with those three because they were by far the most prevalent. When you looked at relationships among total outside activities and alcohol and tobacco and other drug use, correlations between 0.13 and 0.23 with a negative relationship. So the more activities you participated in, the less likely you were to engage in substance use behaviors or delinquency behaviors. And then when you looked at individual activities in alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use, youth groups, so a relationship decreasing, small effect. Other school activities, small, broaching on medium. And then counseling had a positive relationship. So we subsequently dropped counseling from our subsequent analyses. Our assumption, and it hasn't been tested yet, but our assumption is kids that are in counseling are often engaged in counseling because they're engaging in delinquent or substance use behavior. So that wasn't really, it makes sense for us that there's a positive relationship, but it's not necessarily risk or productive. We think if we go back and we talk to the kids that it's probably a consequence that they engage in the behaviors and subsequently they're asked to visit the school psychologist or social worker. When we looked at correlations between alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use and then the risk and protective factors that are available in the survey, so we're looking at religiosity, we're looking at engagement in pro-social activities with your family. When you look at the individual level, the correlations range between 0.2 and almost 0.7. So very strong relationships between alcohol and drug use and the risk and protective factors at the individual level. And the same holds true for the peer level, not surprisingly, if you're associating with friends who are engaging in drug and alcohol use or delinquent behavior, you're more likely to be engaging in some level of substance use. The family level goes between the small to moderate effect, and then the school level, small to moderate, and the neighborhood level, small to moderate. So again, we knew and we expected that these other risk and protective factors would be associated with alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use, and we weren't surprised. But what we wanted to do was see what happens when we throw involvement in outside activities into the mix. So when we just regressed the outside activities on the risk behaviors related to substance use, we found that there were small but significant effects, so that there was a slight increase, 7% increase in alcohol use compared to no alcohol use. And that being in a youth group and being in an other school activity, while minimal, indeed appeared to be protective. So that was alcohol 30 days. And if you look at this, you'll see that participation in organized sports actually increases your risk of alcohol use. Not surprising, but confirmed in our sample. Is that a surprise to anyone? Okay. And you all work with teenagers? Yes, you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so scouts, youth group, and other school activities, again, was protective. In terms of marijuana use, again, the organized sports had a positive relationship, but the other school activities, a stronger reduction for marijuana use ever, marijuana use past 30 days, and in regards to any drug use. When we're looking at the full model, so what I did is I did a logistic regression, and I started with my individual level factors, entered them first, added my peer factors, my family factors, my school factors, and my neighborhood factors. So I really explained close to 60% of the risk in the variability here. Other school activities continue to be a significant predictor, so that as kids engaged in other school activities, they were less likely to engage in marijuana use. And then for binge drinking, music remained a significant predictor. So there were some limitations despite the large sample size. This is a convenient sample, so we have limited generalizability, and of course we can't make any cause and effect conclusions from these analyses. There's the possibility of social desirability, but there are several questions in the survey that really try to look at reducing or eliminating those participants that may have been answering in a less than truthful manner. There is a question at the end of the survey that says, how honest were you in answering these questions? And so you just drop those subjects. And there's implications for public health nurses. As I mentioned before, I am part of a multidisciplinary group looking at these issues. My colleague from public affairs has met with the school districts to talk to them about, do they use these data when they receive them from the mental health department? Do they use them for planning? And unfortunately, many of them do not. They get the data and they really don't know what to do with it. So part of what we're looking at as a next step down the road is working with schools to say, how are these budget changes affecting your school system? What are you doing to facilitate kids having opportunities to participate in outside activities, particularly those other school activities? I always tell my students, I've been nursing faculty for about 5 years. Most of my life has been spent either as a clinician or as a public health administrator. And I always tell my students how critical it is that they work with community organizations and when they graduate to participate in boards and go to meetings so that they can help spread the message that we have an impact on the health of our youth. And so we know that we also need to be careful when we're working with kids who are engaged in organized sports to continue to emphasize the fact that there is a level of vulnerability, folks. And if you participate or engage in certain risk behaviors, you do run the risk of not only getting arrested, but also having some level of injury that may occur. Also, I encourage my students, they're all, you know, I think all of us have health policy as part of our activities in their senior year or earlier, as well as our graduate students. So again, the sense that these are policies that we can directly affect as nurses. School level policies, state level policies that we can have a direct effect on. So our next steps from this particular project, we're going to be establishing a series of focus groups within three target school districts. We're going to be talking to the youth about what exactly are the other school activities that you engage in, what are some facilitators and what are some barriers. Are there particular clubs that are more attractive? Is there some level of bias so that the kids that participate in the activities may also be having some other factors going on that we haven't identified? We are in the process of putting the data at the school level for all the districts so they can see how their schools are comparing to the full sample as a whole. And we're going to continue to collaborate with the school districts to explore options to continue these outside activities, because many of our school districts in New York State have really been substantially impacted by decrease in funding at the state level. I like my governor a lot, but we have had some really substantial issues in the education arena right now. So thank you. Questions? Yes. That isn't an item on the prevention needs assessment survey, so that wasn't something that we could look at. Several of the schools that responded, however, were schools where youth at risk may be participating, so our local BOCES or a learning center, so that those schools certainly had higher risk behaviors that were admitted by the youth and less participation in the outside activities. But great question. Thank you. So the question, I'm sorry, for the purpose of recording was, when we have youth who have developmental disabilities or other challenges, were we able to separate that out in our analyses? And no, we were not.
Other questions for any of us?
Well, have a great conference. Thank you.
Thank you.